Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Yes, indeed. Ashley Sekel, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. You know, we are talking to you about paternity and child maintenance, a huge, huge topic these days. And so it's good that we are going to be hearing from a professional exactly how to, attend to these things and what maintenance is and what is not, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here's a scenario. A man has been paying child maintenance towards a child who was believed to be his for at least 8 years without maintenance order in place. And, he just supported the child under the impression that he was the father. After a paternity test, he discovers that he's not the biological father of the child and now wants to claim all the child maintenance back from the mother of the child. Man, we're going to be talking about this and more. Now, first of all, let's talk about maintenance and let's get to understand how does the court look at maintenance, or how does the law actually look at what maintenance is?
Well, if you are dependent on a party, and usually, the scenario is often the relationship between a child and a parent, that with the child being dependent on the parent, and maybe, there's certain allegations that the parent is either not maintaining the child or the extent of the maintenance is not sufficient to meet the child's needs. You approach the courts, you complete what is known as a Form 2B, where the court looks at your capacity, your earning capacity, as a person against whom the maintenance is claimed, and that is calculated against the child's expenses. And it's a mathematical calculation, whether the court does not just look into how much you earn, how much the child needs, but in the event that there is more than one party who could contribute to those maintenance obligations, then a mathematical calculation is done to determine, what the proportional contribution should be. And once a court has determined, what the extent of the maintenance should be, that becomes a court order, which must be adhered to, failing which there are certain repercussions which can stretch as far as contempt of court proceedings, which might very well result in the imprisonment of a party who has chosen to disregard the court order. Usually the courts are very reluctant to send a party to prison for failing to maintain, because it defeats the entire purpose. The idea is not to go and throw you in prison, but the idea is to get you to maintain you're dependent. So if we throw you into prison, or if the law throws you into prison, it doesn't really help, because now that you're in prison, then who's going to be taking care of the child? But we have seen, certain instances where court orders were just flaunted, and so the court had to stamp its authority, and, the perpetrators or people against whom an order had been made were actually sent to prison. Mm. So that's more or less how this maintenance thing works.
Mm. Right. So effectively, in the case of a person who has just been paying freely, would that be looked at as maintenance, or he's just doing what he pleases?
It is maintenance, because remember, you've got a maintenance order, and the operative word there is order. When it comes to court, you are now ordered to maintain.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that
ordinarily,
in the instance where a brother has just been paying, there's no order in place. He's just told that, listen, now I'm pregnant, and then he takes responsibility. So in that case, there's no maintenance order.
So what you have is that you've got maintenance, but there's no order. And as I was talking about the operative word, order.
I get
so maintenance should be a natural obligation. But unfortunately, because we live in the world that we live in, many people, dispose of their responsibilities, or just don't take their responsibilities upon their shoulders. And in those instances, then the court has to step in and order you to maintain. But in a perfect world, nobody should be ordered by a court. The court need not come in, and so it is still maintenance nonetheless, whether it's a court that has ordered it or it's a natural obligation a natural responsibility that is undertaken by a party, it remains maintenance because you are maintaining the dependent.
Right. I wonder, man, maintaining. I'm not sure if it's their best word. Maybe supporting. I don't know. But hey, I'm not the legal person here. Now,
yeah, look, I suppose one could use those terms synonymously.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, maintenance, especially if you're a technical person, you might think, I maintain a vehicle. Maintenance is for inanimate objects.
Exactly.
Why do we use that term?
Exactly. That's
for natural persons.
That's what I'm thinking. Hey, but hey, we here and we found things like that. Now, the example that I made earlier, can one then claim child maintenance after a negative paternity test?
So when you say, sorry, we just need to clarify the question is, can you claim, as in can you, so the paternity test has come out, because there's two scenarios to this. There's a potential claim where you're saying that, okay, we've now found out that the child is not his, but I want the court to order him to continue maintaining because now he's not going to maintain.
Mm.
So that's one claim. And then there's the other side, where you saying now you've just found out that this is not your dependent. This, well, it is. It was your dependent, but you did so under the misrepresentation that this was your child, mm-hmm. only to learn later that it's not your child, and then you want to claim back
mm-hmm.
all those 8 years that you've been supporting your child. So just clarify to me between these two questions, which would you like me to answer?
I now that you've raised the first one, I was actually attending to the second one, but I think you've raised a very critical one here, because can it arise that after a brother discovers that, well, this is not their child, this is not his child, then a woman would then go and claim that he continues maintenance?
Yeah, look, it really depends, because you certainly could, but you know, the court would have to look circumspectly, each case on its own merits. We have had a few cases where, and maybe let me just be careful not to say that we've had a case where usually it's the male figures that want to renege on what they've been previously doing. We've had a case before whereby a gentleman separated from the woman.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference here was that he always knew that the child was not his.
Ooh.
But then after they had separated, so it wasn't a secret. So they knew because she came into the relationship with the child.
Mm-hmm.
They got married. And then later on would divorce. And when they divorced, she then claimed that he must continue maintaining or supporting, let me use the word support, supporting the young lad.
Ooh.
And the court actually found in her favor because, the type of relationship that he had built with his child, and, you know, he had enrolled the child in fancy schools, the child had fancy needs, and he was the only part who was financially capable of doing that. And so the court ruled that it would be unfair, you know, it would be really unfair that you give this child this type of a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you separate with the child's mother, then now you're going to deprive the child of a lifestyle that you had introduced the child to. So it cannot be that, you know, when the court is looking at how children are treated, and then children are almost treated as pawns, you know, that look, that I only take care of you because I am in a relationship with your mother. And it's almost like you are now buying the mother's love, so to say, or the relationship with the mother. And then once you separate, and then the child must then stand to suffer. So the court in that case, you know, found that there were adequate grounds for the continual maintenance of the child. And look, the principle makes sense if you think about it. We've had spousal maintenance, for instance, where you fall out of love with your own wife, but then they still claim spousal maintenance because you took care of them whilst they were with you. So you can't now come and deprive them of that lifestyle just because you are no longer together. You know, it must be in a phased-out approach. So, yes, we've certainly seen that happen before in court.
Yeah, you know, Ashley, I would only say after God, fear other people.
Let me not comment on that.
But now let's go to the second one. Can then one claim back child maintenance after a negative paternity test? Now they didn't know this was their child, and they now discover that what? So here I've been supporting this child under the understanding that this was my own child, and now it's not. Well, I need my money back. Can a person do that?
Well, you certainly can, but the better question would be, would you be successful? And the likelihood of you being successful in bringing it in that claim are very negligible. The probability of your success is very, very negligible. I think I am aware of one case where there was an attempt made, which also was very unsuccessful. And the court, the reasoning behind the court's reasoning in not allowing, the party to claim back was very reasonable. And maybe if you take a moment with me and we go through the court's thinking process.
Okay.
Who are you claiming from?
You've been giving the money to the mother.
Yeah, sorry.
I lost you there. Ashley, I still...
Yeah, I'm still here, and okay. I just want to run the risk of now interviewing you. That you're supposed to be posing the questions to me, but look, the reason why I ask you the question is simply you're giving the money to the mother so that the child can be maintained, right? Mm-hmm. Or you are directly maintaining the child because you could be buying the groceries, you could be paying the school fees,
right.
You could be buying the clothes, you could be buying the toys.
Mm-hmm.
So the beneficiary of your maintenance
is
the dependent and not the mother.
Okay.
So if you are going to claim against the mother, on what grounds? Because one could think, look, the law is very definitive, and then there's different branches of law or different instances under which you can lodge a claim against somebody else. It's either there was a contract, that was entered into, or one could look at unjustified enrichment, where you say that there was no justification for the payments that I made. And that's one scenario that one could best think to be befitting of this scenario, where you say that this was unjustified enrichment because there was no just cause for me to pay this maintenance, because in the just cause ordinarily would have existed if I was the biological father or the biological mother to the dependent. But now the problem that you now have is that it is not the mother that benefited from your taking care or support. It is the child that benefited. And once you start speaking children in our constitutional dispensation, where we have a section in the constitution that says that in every matter concerning a child or relating to a child, the child's best interests are of paramount importance. That's the law.
Yeah.
So that means that you are now saying that I have a financial interest in that I was maintaining this child, and the Constitution says that for as long as it is a child, it is the child's best interest that the court is going to consider in this matter. So you are saying that you want to claim back money, one, from the mother. The mother was not the beneficiary, so you are not attacking the right person. If you say, I want to claim it from the child, one, it's, you're obviously going to struggle because the child probably has no means to pay you back.
Mm.
And in any event, the child's best interests are going to be of paramount importance. The court is going to be more inclined towards protecting the child's best interest as opposed to your own financial or commercial interest. And that was the reasoning behind the court's dismissal of this claim in the matter that I'm aware of. And I can almost foresee that in any matter that relates to children, their best interests are always going to be taken into account. And chances are very high that you are going to be on the negative receiving end of the court finding in this matter. Unless you've got a case of its own nature, one could maybe think of a case where you were paying 10,000 rand to the mother every month and you thought that money was going towards maintenance, but it was not going towards maintenance. It was going towards mascara, facials and all of these fancy dinners, then in that case, the mother was a beneficiary and you could certainly claim back. But really, you know, that then has nothing to do with the child, because whether or not the child was yours, money was diverted and used by the mother. But if it can be shown that the money benefited the child, the likelihood of you successfully recovering that money are close to non-existent.
Because you see, because the reason I'm asking is that I've heard gentlemen saying, well, when they pay the money for the upkeep of the child, they would then go an extra mile to make sure that the mother's situation is also comfortable. So, to say, okay, she must have a car so that at least she's able to move around so that she does not get into, you know, taxes and all of that with my son and perhaps a few other luxuries, just to make sure that she's comfortable. So those that don't really have anything to do with the child per se, but just to make sure that this person who's taking care of my child is also comfortable.
Yeah. So you already struggled, because then what you're saying to the court is that there was a just cause for the action that I undertook.
Well, under the guise that this was my son.
Yeah. But you see, once you pull the son in, then you've already lost. Because what you want to do is to, when you try and claim under unjustified enrichment, you want to show that there was no just cause. If the moment that you say that I bought her the car so that, at the moment you put in the so that, then you're actually giving the court the just cause so that the child can have transport to school. Now I want to claim back that vehicle. You are really going to struggle, because once you take that vehicle back, what you are basically saying to the court is that I was acting in the child's best interest because the child needed to be transported to school. But now I have found out that the child is not my child, so I want the car back. And then the court is going to ask you, because now there's a child involved, who is going to take the child to school? Because it is the child's best interest that the court must first consider. So now that you want to take the vehicle back, we don't ignore the fact that she's driving the vehicle. We don't ignore the fact that you bought the vehicle. But what do you say must now happen to the child's transportation? Now the court must then weigh your interest in getting this car back, because you feel betrayed and you're probably just going to park that car or sell it or, you know, just watch it and, you know, not do much with the vehicle. The court is not going to be concerned about your spite, your hate, and your betrayal. That is not the point of departure for the court. The court's point of departure is, what would be in the child's best interest? Is it in the child's best interest that we take this car back to this guy because he is disappointed and he's angry? Or should we keep this car with the mother? And if keeping the car with the mother is going to be in the child's best interest, then the court will give that order. If bringing the car back to you, because that is in the child's best interest, the court will then do that. But the court will never, ever make a decision that is not in the child's best interest.
So basically, there's just no winning for the gentleman. He's been duped. And unfortunately, when he discovers a couple of years later, well, just walk away, brother, and count your losses.
Yes. Well, the question is, do you really want to term it as a loss? Because when the legislator looks at it, that's not a loss. What the father has lost, he's lost trust. I mean, what the gentleman has lost, he's lost trust. He's been betrayed by the woman. He's lost a relationship with the woman, definitely. But insofar as benefiting the child, that can never be, you know, one should never view that as a loss, because you are actually making a difference in the life of somebody that is vulnerable, somebody that needs protection, somebody that needs to be taken care of, because that child has nothing to do. You know, the child did not elect to be in the position that they are now in. And I think we should think bigger, whether you're the gentleman or you're the female that is taking care of a child, think much bigger beyond the relationship. You must think about the child, because if everybody reasoned if everybody reasoned it as a loss, then we might actually live in a world where there's not going to be adoptions, right? Because who must adopt somebody that is not their biological child? There's not going to be a gentleman who's going to visit and take care of children who are coming from abusive homes or children that are orphaned. Why? Simply because the reasoning that we have is that you must only take care of somebody, you know, that comes from your biological loins. And if not, then that person must not be taken care of. The child must not be taken care of. So even in a relationship set up, we must not maintain children just because of the relationship that we have. The maintenance of the kids or the supporting of the children's upkeep must never be dependent on the relationship that the grown-ups have. The upkeep of the children must be based on the fact that they are children that we love, they're children that we want to protect, and they're children whose best interests are of paramount importance when it comes to our hearts. So whether or not I remain with your mother, I will take care of you because you are a child and you are a child that is within my immediate vicinity, and I have vowed that I will take care of you. I think that's how everybody should reason. And because humanity has lost that humanity-ness, if there's such a word, unfortunately, now the courts have to step in and become the upper guardians of these children, because if the courts don't step in to protect these children, and you know, they are going to be destitute. They're going to be thrown into the jungle because now their upkeep is dependent on what the relationship between the parents are.
You know, I really wish I had time for this, Ashley, because I think there's an element here that I really wish we could deal with. Because when a person is lied to and they are doing things under the understanding that this is the situation, only to find out that this person actually knew the whole time that they are lying to you for years and years and years. There's emotional damage they suffered by the gentleman. There's all sorts of damage that the gentleman has suffered as a result of this situation, only to be told on the last minute that, well, it's not your biological child. And of course, I do understand that there is a moral responsibility to take care of the weak among us, etc., etc. I do, though, find it unfortunate that the same law would not act in protection of those who would actually be suffering whatever kind of damage as a result of lies and false pretenses, etc., etc. But hey, I think for another day, maybe we can deal with that. But for today, our time is far, far spent. And thank you so much for joining us.
Only a pleasure. Keep well then. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.